Welcome. Those of you that came today, welcome. With this talk and the lunch that follows, we finish up a week of meditation. It's a traditional fall session or meditation intensive time that goes for traditionally 7 days or some. This one actually went for 5 days. It's called Denkoe. And Denkoe means transmission of light or unfolding of light, gathering of those that unfold the light, the gathering of those that transmit light. So that's what we've been doing. Does it show? Do we radiate? Are we just glowing?
Joe is.
Yeah, Joe's in the sunshine. Thank you, Joe. Anyway, it's a kind of pleasant time for us because we're finishing up a meditation session, which is it takes quite a strong effort to meditate for a complete day, and for many days it takes strong effort, and so we're kind of feel a little happy to be wrapping things up and finishing our good work. And thank you for those of you that just came today. Thank you for joining us. This is a nice time to join us because we're almost done. We've been looking at one of our ancestors' teachings this week. His name is Hongzhi, and Hongzhi was quite an extraordinary teacher in the 11th century, Joe. China, 1100 in China. He helped revitalize the monastic structure. And even though this isn't a monastery, this is a lay practice place, a Zen center, we still hold these monastery forms, these forms of practice. And this sesshin that we did is actually an expression of a monastic practice. Even though we're not a monastery, still, for this time, for this week, we kind of become a monastery, and we become dedicated to this single-minded practice. So Hongzhi helped formulate these forms, and they got translated into were flavored by the Japanese Soto tradition as it came into Japan, and now it's being somewhat flavored by our American tendencies or predilections. So very much a blend of many cultures. But at that time, Hongzhi was very instrumental, and he helped the practice to focus on focus in the sense of becoming very, very pure or elemental or essential. It had taken on some of us mentioned it had taken on aspects of what you might call a kind of project mentality. And Hongzhi liberated the practice from being an assignment or a project to being just for itself. And this practice was called silent illumination practice, which was just being with the body and mind as they are, just sitting, just meeting yourself here, not having a specific assignment or a goal or an idea of gaining something or being something else. But and so in that sense, the practice, Hongzhi made the practice very, very pure and a little more difficult because it's not, you're not necessarily have a project or have a method that's a prescriptive method. But from that, Dogen Zenji, from that inspiration and the practice that followed a few generations after that, Dogen Zenji brought this Soto way to Japan, and we have this what's called Shikantaza, this just sitting practice that we do so well, don't we? We're just really good at it. Sometimes we're good at it. Do you have anything you'd like to add?
I have mixed thoughts. Initially, I had a loaded agenda of topics that I wanted to talk about. But I think the heart of it was the acupuncture needle of Zazen, which was written by Hongzhi, a poem. And I have that in three different versions. And also Dogen's The Point of Zazen, another poem that was written after Hongzhi and in honor of Hongzhi, but a different way of saying it. And then various comments from Rev Anderson and from Koban and from Thich Nhat Hanh that really address, now that we've identified with Hongzhi the point, not only the acupuncture needle is another way of saying it, so it's kind of a curative or a therapeutic perspective of practice.
Could you read that?
Well, I'm wondering if, and then some other quotes from Koban. Well, that's too loaded, and you had something that you wanted to read, so I'm quite happy to wait.
Let's start with that.
Okay.
We have a bunch of stuff. These, by the way, what we've been reading is the various teachers throughout the week have talked on Hongzhi's practice instructions. And they're very pithy and I call them almost juicy statements about practice and encouraging us to practice. And this one, the acupuncture
needle
of Zazen.
Of Zazen. This is a different practice instruction, but I wanted to start with a couple of sentences on that. The field of boundless emptiness is what exists from the very beginning. You must purify, cure, grind down, or brush away all of the tendencies you have fabricated into apparent habits. Then you can reside in the clear circle of brightness. And the main point in that is that one of the options is just to brush away those tendencies that you have fabricated into apparent habits. So the acupuncture needle of Zazen, first version, is the essential function of all Buddhas, the functional essence of our ancestors, is to know without touching things and illuminate without encountering a thing. Knowing without touching things, this knowledge is innately subtle. Illuminating without encountering objects, this illumination is innately miraculous. The knowledge, innately subtle, has never engaged in discriminative thinking. The illumination, innately miraculous, has never displayed the slightest identification. Never engaging in discriminating thinking, this knowledge is rare without match. Never displaying the most minute identification, this illumination is complete without grasping. The water is clear right down to the bottom. Fish lazily swim on. The sky is vast without end. Birds fly into the distance. So the second version that I'd hoped that you would read is also on page 61 in your copy, but with your notations, which I think clarify it.
My
handwritten.
Oh, sure.
Different.
The essential function of all Buddhas, the functional essence of all our ancestors, is to know without grasping a thing and illuminate without encountering a thing. Knowing without touching things, this knowing is innate and subtle. Illuminating without encountering objects, this illumination is innately miraculous. With knowledge being innately subtle, it never engages in discriminative thinking. With illumination innately miraculous, it never displays the slightest identification. With never engaging in discriminating thinking, knowledge is unusual and not to be measured. With never displaying any distinction or identification, this illumination is complete. There is no grasping. The water is clear right down to the bottom, and fish calmly swim on. The sky is vast without any end, and birds fly out into the extended vastness. This, by the way, this poem is kind of really core poem for the Zen way.
Yet a third version, I'll read most of it as long as it's relevant. The hub of Buddha's activity, the turning of the ancestors' hub. Oops, I think I'm making a mistake. I think this is Dogen's.
Is that the response from Dogen, the response
yeah,
poem?
It has a better form.
Go ahead. And, oh, do you have another one?
Yes. Two others. The hub of Buddha's activity, the turning of the ancestors' hub, it moves through your non-thinking and is completed in the realm of non-merging. As it moves along with your non-thinking, its emergence is immediate. That is, it is completed in the realm of non-merging. Completeness itself is realization. When its emergence is intimate, There is no separation. When completeness reveals itself, it is neither real nor apparent. When there is immediacy without separation, immediacy is dropping away with no obstacles. Realization, beyond real or apparent, is effort without desire. Clear water all the way to the ground, a fish swims like a fish, vast sky transparent throughout, a bird flies like a bird. Have yet another version of that. I don't know if you feel you're the teacher, so if you feel it's worth hearing and get a different perspective from Dogen.
This?
Yeah.
This is Dogen?
I believe so. I'm not positive, but I think it is.
The hub of Buddha's activity, the turning of the ancestors' hub, is known free of forms, illuminated beyond conditions. As it is known free of forms, knowledge is subtle. As it is illuminated beyond conditions, illumination is wondrous. When knowledge is subtle, there is no thought of discrimination. When illumination is wondrous, there is not the slightest hint. When there is no thought of discrimination, knowledge is extraordinary with no comparison. When there is not the slightest hint, illumination has nothing to grasp. Water is clear to the bottom, where the fish swims without moving. The sky is vast and boundless, where the bird flies away and disappears.
Mm-hmm. So my point in bringing that to the fore was just that it is called the acupuncture needle of Zazen, at least in one of the translations, and Dogen, the point of Zazen, and you can take that as being the whole point of doing this, that there is a point. It's one question that was raised yesterday. And also the sort of the still point, the point on which it all resolves, revolves, or even the meaning and purpose. And it is the hub, the heart of the Buddha's activity is another way of saying the first line. It's what the Buddha did. The turning of the ancestors' hub is also the progress of the ancestors' work. It moves along with your non-thinking. It actually takes root in your non-thinking. And it is completed in the realm of my non-hindering. Thinking of the five hindrances, it will grow internally. The slight illumination and the knowing, subtle knowing, are permitted by the source of the hindrances. One statement is not to preach one word. And I get in trouble and I become somewhat passionate about some depth. So I'm perhaps you can find a way forward.
I think you should keep being passionate about one word.
Please.
I wanted to add, as far as understanding the Buddhas, something, a paragraph from Reb Anderson, which is, what is a Buddha and how do we relate to Buddhas? How we relate to Buddhas, to my mind, is in understanding the needle point and allowing subtle illumination and knowing to gestate through zazen. Rip's paragraph is, a Buddha is someone who sees the way things really are. When we see the way things really are, we see that we're all in this together, that we're all interdependent. A great surpassing love arises from that wisdom, and that love leads the Buddha to wish that all beings would open to the wisdom and be free of the misery that arises from ignoring the way things are. Buddhas appear in the world because they want us to have a Buddha's wisdom so that we will love every single being completely and protect every single being without exception, without limits, just as all the Buddhas do. So another expression of the needle point is that love flows unhindered through the non-thinking, and meaning, knowing love develops. Think of a photographic emulsion gradually, progressively developing. Meaning develops through non-hindering, non-aversion, non-attachment.
Sounds good to me. Does anyone have any thoughts about this stuff?
Yes, I'm also very touched. And I'm also smiling. If I may say, because my life's work is acupuncture.
You hit the point.
And one thing is, we all are part of nature, and it's so important to live this, embrace this part of nature. And what I may, or perhaps I would say, that what the needle does is, the acupuncture needle is mostly, it opens up the flow of qi. It's opening up. And you talk about the unhindered flow also with the photographic lotion. What I would say is that an acupuncture needle is there to open up the flow. And when the flow is happening, then everything is happening. So that's my...
A fish swims like a fish, a bird flies away in the sky, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, thank you.
If you look, we were talking about Ed Brown earlier. If you look at his article in the latest issue of Bodhidharma magazine, it is titled Being Shaken, and it's about his 10 years of sitting experience, which were essentially to accomplish that objective, but he didn't know it, and he was hindered greatly by his childhood trauma. Very, very dramatic story. And the essence of the bottom line is that I think he comes to the point, and this is way oversimplified, but that he was transformed through this Zazen therapy. There's another article by Data Loshi that talks about Zazen. Ask.
I have a question. Cliff, in your poem, it mentioned non-attachment, which reminded me that I recently had trouble explaining what non-attachment was, so I need to come in for a new definition. How do you explain non-attachment in a way that people can understand? Because I'm not able to.
Do you know what a lamprey eel is? This is kind of a joke. That's the ultimate in attachment. Do you know what a lamprey eel is?
A what?
A lamprey eel. They don't have jaws like other eels.
Yeah.
Eels.
They have lamprey eel. Yeah. They have a certain kind of mouth that attaches to it. Well, it's just in the grass, and it looks like some grass, but when a trout goes by, it notices a trout and it attaches to the trout with its mouth and basically attaches to that trout and eats the trout. From that,
yeah,
point. Eats the inside of the whole trout.
It's not pretty. No.
Do you have any other examples?
I'm trying to help this guy out.
Well, I like that because I think after that example, nobody wants to hear anymore.
Specifically, the kind that people can understand.
Makes a horrible creature.
Well, see,
it's something about a drought.
Yeah.
Say someone had a good relationship with the world and their friends, and then, as an example, maybe they became a Buddhist monk and had robes and learned the forms and the services, and thought it was a really big deal, and. Liked them so much and thought they were so important that they forgot their humanness or forgot their friends. There's another example of attachment. Koban Chinoroshi and I both like to paint and I had come back from Japan with a really good paintbrush, and I'm very possessive of my paintbrush. I'm very, very possessive of my paintbrush. And I spent, at a very good art store in Japan, I bought this really fine paintbrush. And it was maybe over $200 for this paintbrush. And Koban... I was in a calligraphy class with Koban, and Koban said, is this paintbrush mine? He probably didn't know. I mean, and I said, no, it's my paintbrush. And to this day, I regret it because I had this wonderful opportunity to give my teacher a gift of this brush, and I missed it. Mea culpa. I'm really sorry about that. Do you have any examples of attachment? There's a lot of examples of attachment. I think everyone has like a whole closet full of examples of attachment.
I'm attached to the notion that it's lunchtime. You can help me somehow.
What would be the non-attachment of that notion?
Suffering.
I don't think any of us is sitting here wasting away. We could eat lunch for dinner and just share all our attachments.
Well, I guess it's lunchtime, huh? Just once again, we had some closing remarks, but once again, on behalf of the merit of sincere practice that extends, we think it's just for ourselves, and we think it's just for this time and place, but we don't know if that's so. And there's been a rumor going around for 2,500 years that it's more than that. So on behalf of the merit of this practice that we've done this week, extending to all beings, it goes Yaratra, Punyata, Pudyam, Tarvatatva, Anatara Jana Vaptaye. It means, may the merit of this work, the merit of this practice, be extended outward for the complete liberation and emancipation of all beings. So I would like to thank the people that practiced this week, made their good effort, because it not only goes in, it goes out. So thank you.